A long time ago, there were two friends that set forth on a great journey of knowledge. Now, they welcome you to join them on an exciting new adventure called Q-Quest.
So, Alex, let's just talk about the elephant in the room, okay?
Quite a large elephant.
Wait, I've got a better one. Let's talk about the flying bison in the room.
Yes, that's much better.
Welcome to the podcast of the worst puns you've ever heard in your life, right?
Yes.
But
that was pretty good, though.
Thank you. Avatar is coming to Netflix, guys. Are you excited for this or what?
Could not be any more excited. Literally, there isn't an announcement that could get me more excited. You could tell me Star Wars was getting moved up to come out tomorrow, and I'd be more excited about this.
I know. I am literally beside myself. Avatar, the Avatar, is coming to Netflix. Now, this isn't just like, you know, M. Night taking Avatar and making a movie, okay? This is the creators. This is Brian Konietzko and Michael Dante DiMartino. They are working on it together. They are putting all of their fans first. Trust me, I know this. They've said it. They're not going to whitewash the cast. It's going to be real. It's going to be true to the story. Aang's name is not going to be Aang, you know?
not going to be Sokka instead of Sokka.
Oh, okay. Let's not go there. I think this is enough. We can't talk about
that
anymore.
I imagine the Firebenders can create fire from nothing instead of having to get it from something.
Oh, wait.
And I have to say,
stop.
Iroh better have a belly. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
He better not be
super fit.
Yeah, no. He's got to have a belly.
A super fit, like, beautiful man. Like,
yeah. No, he's got to be a chubby little Iroh.
Yeah, I think they're going to do a really good job. I've been following them on Instagram, and they've been posting pictures. Brian Konietzko has been posting pictures of him moving all of his stuff from his office to their new Netflix offices. So that's really exciting, seeing them put all of like their memorabilia and plushies and little toys, and they've been like finding all their like old artwork for the show and kind of digging that up, and all that's resurfacing on their Instagram. So it's been really cool. You guys should definitely check that out on their Instagram. You should too, Alex. It's really cool.
Yeah, I actually haven't, so I'm definitely going to do that.
Yeah, follow them. They're really cool. But yeah, let's get into today's podcast. Welcome, guys, to Q-Quest. This is our third episode, I believe, of Q-Quest. Right, Alex?
Yep, number
That's
three.
That's right. We're talking about The Dragon Prince, which is this amazing, amazing Netflix cartoon animation over by Wonderstorm. And they are putting together something that is really shaping up to be, I think, the next like big fantasy cartoon show. Right, Alex?
Yeah, I can't wait till we can finish this episode and I can watch the last three.
I know. That's like one of the things driving us to do this podcast, because we're only watching three episodes at a time of The Dragon Prince, and then we're doing the podcast for those three episodes because we like to sit on the content and think about, you know, like what is going on with our characters? What's the backstory? What are we not seeing, you know, the initial time we watched the episode? But then when we go back and look at it again, what is coming out, you know, the cracks? Because I am seeing things so differently the second time I watch each episode. And I think some of the characters are like hiding all of these things. And I think we're both starting to like see what's going on behind the scenes. Right, Alex?
Yeah, definitely. You're right. On the second watch, you do notice a lot more stuff about the characters that maybe they're trying to hide, or, you know, just different little things.
Yeah. So this show is definitely worth the watch. Before you guys listen any further, if you haven't watched episodes 4 through 6, definitely go watch them right now, because those are the episodes we're going to talk about right now. So, yeah, let's just dive right into it. Right, Alex?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So, I mean, book one, right? This is like the coolest thing ever. Moon. Book one. I love that. Yeah, book one, Moon. Episode 4 is called Bloodthirsty, and it's called Bloodthirsty for a reason. Let's talk about Viren, who wants that crown so desperately. He's going to bury his quote and unquote friend, King Harrow, like right away. Like, there's supposed to be
way too early.
Yeah, there's supposed to be a waiting time, and they talk about that the town is like we haven't had enough time to mourn the king, and you're just trying to bury him and get crowned like all in the same night. You're crazy, dude. You're crazy. How do you feel about that?
It's pretty shady. I mean, obviously he pretty much cares about one thing, and that's the power and control, and being the king is the way to get there. And that's why he's trying to just get it done as fast as possible, or at least that's what it seems. I haven't really noticed anything to make me think differently.
I know. Yeah. Over the next three episodes that we're going to talk about, he is just piling on the shade after shade after shade. Like, no joke. This is when Viren is – his true colors are coming out right now.
Yeah. Like, they're pretty dark.
They're very, very dark. They are shades, man. They are shades of dark. But yeah, so the episode opens up and we get Rayla, who's got this really funny scene, which reminds me of Spider-Man, when I think the original Spider-Man movie, where Peter Parker is trying to figure out, like, how do I shoot webs? He's like doing the funny like hand motions.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, right.
I knew there was something it made me think of, and now that is exactly it.
Yeah.
When I was watching, I was like, oh, this reminds me of like somebody making up words, and that's exactly the scene.
Yeah, we open up on Rayla sitting on a rock, and she's trying to figure out how to get this this band off of her hand, and she's like, unbind yourself, unbind thyself. Unbindle, you know, like she says like all these these crazy things, and her hand I think is actually doing the Spider-Man web shooter hand.
Yeah.
I looked at it closely and I'm pretty sure they just threw that in there just for, I don't know, just for kicks, but it was really funny. Yeah, it just like shows the comedy that they're putting into this show. Just the characters are so serious, but also have this like really, you know, silly, cute, young side, which they're not afraid to like go into, you know, during those little breaks of, you know, like the plot twists and all the different plot things going on. They're going into the character relationships, which is something that made Avatar so special. They did so well over there, so they're doing that on this show, which I think is great. And after that scene, Rayla's just talking to Bait, who obviously doesn't talk, doesn't speak, makes these like weird like groaning sounds, which we found out watching the Twitch live stream, that the Dragon Prince official channel over on Twitch did a live stream, and I guess the voice of Bait may or may not be one of the creators of the show.
Aaron Ehas.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, they said he just made the noise, and they're on an iPhone and just said like, "All right, there it is."
Yeah, I mean, he does it for like the title scroll for the show at the beginning. So we're not sure if he does it throughout the entire show, but I think that's really, really funny to note. But yeah, so in this episode, the characters. You know, we have the whole scene with King Harald being buried with Viren. And I think one of the cool things that happens in this episode is that Callum has a moment with Rayla where he talks about how he was never really good at anything. He's not good at sword fighting. He was never good at magic. He wasn't good at much. But then when Callum did that spell in that episode and Rayla called him a mage, he finally felt something. Like, he finally felt good at something. He felt like this is something that he can do. So, you know, he's really, at this point, he's really trying to become a mage. He's really trying to get good at magic. So I think that's really cool. And this is like a big moment for him, right?
Yeah. To me, that seems super relatable. I mean, there's tons of movies about how kids who are like, you know, nerdy and they're not great at sports, but then they're like either awesome at video games or they're super smart or whatever, and it's very relatable in that way.
Yeah.
And it just was a good way of using that world to, you know, have that scenario.
Yeah.
But
so,
you're talking about before that with the ceremony with the burial thing.
Oh yeah.
I just thought it was really interesting, that part in there when the people of the town are refusing to light the torches.
Oh yeah, they didn't want to light the torches.
Yeah,
right. And then, that's right.
Then Claudia does some super crazy magic and just like throwing fire from torch to torch. And
yeah, it's like this fire bending move. And yeah, Viren tells her to do it. So mm-hmm. She was commanded to do it. She didn't just like do it because like she's this evil person, which I'm not sold that she's an evil person. Like, she seems like a good person, just doing what her dad is telling her to do and like doing what Viren tells her to do.
Yeah, it just seems like she's a girl just trusting that her dad knows best, kind of thing.
Exactly. You know, exactly.
Most kids are.
Yeah. Same with Soren, Claudia's brother. They're both doing the same thing, just following their dad's orders. But yeah, that was crazy. Like, I'm gonna be very interested to seeing how Claudia eventually, if she does turn on her dad, possibly that could be a thing. Because like I said, I think she's like inherently good and she'll choose that at the end or whatever. And then maybe there's going to be this tension, this fight between like this magical, like Harry Potter versus Lord Voldemort type thing, you know, like the last movie, probably something like that. I don't know. That would be cool. Like it would.
Yeah,
it would
maybe
be,
it's her and
it would be
Callum ganged up against Viren because he's super powerful.
Yeah, that would be fitting. I would actually love to see that. But yeah, so Callum has that moment with Rayla. He's like, I want to become a mage. I need to learn more magic stuff. And he remembers that he has this magical cube over at the Banther Lodge. So Rayla didn't really want to go there because she knew humans might possibly be there because it's like a human settlement. But Callum convinces her. So they go with Ezrin and Bait to the Banther Lodge. To get this magical cube, which is actually really cool when we get to it. But they get to the lodge and Rayla like goes into the lodge trying to find it. And on the outside, the human forces show up, and the human forces are led by the general of the entire human army, who is just happens to be Callum and Ezrin's aunt Amaya. She's such a cool character. Alex, what do you think of Aunt Amaya?
I think she's awesome, and she reminds me of so much of Toph. Like, right? It's the same kind of concept, except she's deaf instead of being blind, but she's like super tough. Like, woman who is just in charge and, like, you know, she's the commander of the whole thing. And, like, just totally reminded me of that, of Toph, exactly.
Yeah, it's so cool because this character, she uses sign language. And I guess Callum and Ezrin both understand sign language. Is that what we got? Did they?
They
were able to communicate with her. So that's really, really cool. Amaya does have like a translator who does speak the words for the audience because they don't use subtitles in those scenes. So the other guy is, his name is Gren, I believe. And he's like another, he's probably like her trusted sidekick and or love interest. I don't know. I saw that and I was just like, maybe kind of, but we'll see.
A little young.
He's a little young, but she doesn't look that old either, you know?
Yeah, but right. She is the aunt, though, so I'm imagining.
Yeah,
she's
and going into that,
older.
Being the aunt, she is actually biologically Callum's real mother's sister, right? Because you can kind of get that from the skin tone. They both have the same skin tone. And then later on in the episode, they go to, I think it's the next episode they go into that more.
It's the next one.
But yeah, it's really cool. We finally get to get some backstory for Callum, so that's really interesting. And their dynamic is awesome. Like, Amaya is this, she's very strong, very like stern and almost kind of stoic. But she does have like this kind of little funny side that comes out when she acts all motherly towards the kids. She's like, she tries to get them to eat because they haven't been eating. So she like pulls out this bread and she calls it weapons grade bread because it's super old and like super, okay, maybe it's not old, but it's super hard. You know how like those French rolls get really, really hard? She like hits it, whacks it against the table. She's like, weapons grade. And then she feeds it to them. She like cuts it up. Yeah. It was
when
such
I
a good
saw
scene.
The bread like that, it made me think of the Lord of the Rings. What's the bread line?
The bread line. Maggoty bread?
Yeah.
We ain't had nothing but maggoty bread for 3 stinking days.
Yeah. Why can't we have some meat?
Exactly.
I love that.
It's just what made me think of it. I thought that was pretty funny. And then there's some more bread scenes later in the other episodes.
Yeah,
I think it's in the next episode.
Yeah, it's really, really good. One of the breads falls and it falls on a rock, and then the rock splits in half.
Yeah.
It's like the most. I think this episode is like the one where I like really, I died laughing. I died laughing at some of the jokes that they were pulling on the scenes. It was so funny. It was really good. But yeah, so after this whole thing happens, I think Rayla is trying to sneak her way out of the lodge, but gets caught by General Amaya, and they have this fight, really, like this fight up on like the top floor of the lodge, and Amaya clearly overpowers Rayla. Amaya's got this really cool, her weapon, okay, so she doesn't have a sword, she doesn't have a bow, she's got this crazy shield thing that she uses as a weapon. It is so cool. Like, I'm trying to figure out how to describe this, because it rests on her back and it's this massive, massive shield, but the way she uses it, the only thing that kind of reminds me of this weapon is something from The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, where the Uruk-hai at the end of the movie that fights Aragorn, the one that kills Boromir, has this shield that he fights with against Aragorn, and it's on his wrist. It's almost like a Batman type wrist guard thing, and the Uruk-hai pins up Aragorn against the wall, like right at the neck, but doesn't cut his head off or whatever. The same move, like literally the same move, they pull in that scene, Amaya does on Rayla and pins her against the wall, like right at the neck, right on both sides of the neck, right?
Yeah, no, I thought the same thing. It reminded me exactly of that scene and that shield, just like that. Same move, pretty much.
Yeah, and you know, at that point, like it was done. She punches her and knocks her out and then ties her up. And then, of course, she gets out with the help of Bait. Bait does like this crazy flashbang and is able to get away. Ezrin and Callum set that up to happen. And they end up getting out of the house, and they get circled in front of the house, in front of the lodge. And I think Callum says something on the lines of, "She's a bloodthirsty monster. She's going to kill us." And they try to take her out because she's holding them. She's acting, of course. This is something that Callum, excuse me, Callum and Ezrin and Rayla kind of crafted on the moment to make it look like they were not on the same team, like they are, because, you know, the three are working together, but they're trying to make it seem like they're not.
It was Callum's bad idea of a way to let them continue with their mission together, because he didn't think it was going to work to say, like, hey, we're all on the same side. Yeah. Let us go with her.
Yeah.
Like,
so
maybe he's right. Maybe it wouldn't have worked, but it was just like, come on, you could have done a better way.
Yeah. And it just painted Rayla in the wrong light to, you know, all the humans.
And because put Rayla, her in a lot of danger, too.
It did, yeah, because they ended up firing an arrow and it, like, cut off her little Padawan braid thing and pinned it up against the tree next to it. And she was like, that almost killed me, you know? It was kind of scary. I actually got worried for a second. Like, maybe she was going to get shot. And that would have been really bad for their relationship, you know?
Right.
But yeah, so they ended up, you know, pretending that they were hostages, and they like scooted on over to a boat and then took off down the river and got away. But Aunt Amaya sent a tracker, Corvus, after them because they didn't want to have all the human, like that whole army, you know, take off after them. So they just sent one tracker that we meet up again later on. But yeah, that's pretty much. Okay. Wait.
Yeah, there's one big part at the end.
But we've got some big parts before this is over. Okay. So Viren, we got another close up of Viren, another shot of Viren at the castle, and he is talking to Pip, which is
the parrot,
which is the really, really cool parrot that used to belong to King Harrow. Okay, so if you guys watched our last episode where we talked about the Soul Fang serpent that can swap souls between bodies because it had two heads, so it would bite one body or one person or bite another person, and then they would switch souls. So it's pretty much like, you know, like Face Off, you know, in a way, but not just moving their face. It's like just moving their entire like soul. So I believe, because Viren was talking to this bird, which we've never seen Viren like pay any attention to this bird before, I think, and Alex, I'm pretty sure you'll agree with me, that King Harrow's soul is now in Pip the bird.
For sure. I mean, I'm almost convinced. One, like, why is he in a cage now when he wasn't before and he was flying around? And then why is he talking to him? And the bird kind of just, he kind of like says something to the bird, and it looks like the bird doesn't like want to respond, as if it's disappointed in him. And then he kind of looks away, like as if he knows that he's being disapproved by the bird. And why would he be? Why would he care normally if it's just a bird?
But, I know.
So I think it is King Harrow.
Yeah. So Viren goes and walks out on the balcony, and it's during the crowning ceremony. He's about to be crowned king. But then Aunt Amaya shows up, General Amaya, and yells out. Well, doesn't yell out because she doesn't talk. But Gren yells out and says to stop because they found the kids. They found Callum and Ezrin, who are the rightful, you know, the rightful princes that would take the crown after King Harrow's passing. So it ends, and Viren is mad. You see his face, and he is just, he is lit. You know, he is so angry about that. But yeah, it was a really good episode. I really enjoyed that. It was really funny. But during the end credit scene, after watching the Twitch live stream of the creators talking about the show, they talked about how they put things in the end credit scenes that are kind of nods to things that are coming, maybe some characters that are coming that haven't been showed yet in the show. But so I've started watching the end credits, and the last image that they showed during the end credits was of Ezrin eating a taffy elephant ear while riding it, which is something that he talked about in the show, which was just like the most silliest thing you've ever heard. It was just like this quick little dialogue that just like shows Ezrin how he's so young and he has like these silly little dreams. This is a dream that he's describing to Callum, but they actually drew it and put it in the end credit scene, and it's just, it's so funny. It's just like, you really have to watch the end credits.
I need to watch the end credits now. I've watched like, I think one of them.
Yeah.
But for the other ones, I didn't bother. But yeah, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. Definitely worth watching. All right, so then getting into episode 5 is called An Empty Throne, you know, which is clearly talking about how Viren didn't take the throne and now it's empty, and now the human kingdoms don't have any leadership. And this is kind of what's going to lead to the end of the episode and why the characters make certain choices at the end. So that's really cool. But you know, right at the beginning of the episode, we get this very, very interesting shot of Viren, who's walking in the dark. Okay, it's very dark. It's a dimly lit room in the castle tower that he's in. And I cannot say with 100% certainty, but I am 99.9% sure that his hair is white and he's walking a little bit different than he usually does. So yeah, Viren is walking over to this closet, or it looks like a closet, like a smaller room. He opens up the door and you still can't see his face. They're not showing any light of his face. They are showing a little light reflecting off of his eyes, but they will not show his face during this scene. And he talks to some glowing butterflies, it looks like. And he says something like, who's willing to, what is it? What does he say? He says something like,
the one like kind of flies to him, and then kind of like, I think he says something along the lines of like, oh, we have a volunteer.
Yeah, we have a volunteer. Okay. So after that, like there's a shot outside of the room and you see this glowing purple light come through the door. I think, having seen this scene, I think that Viren is actually the old mage from 1,000 years ago that incited this entire war between the elves, dragons, and the humans. What do you think, Alex?
Yeah, I definitely agree. It seems like he's using the butterflies to consume them, like their being, to kind of keep himself as like living forever.
Yeah, he's like the fourth Sanderson sister, right? From Hocus Pocus. Yeah. He's like stealing the youth of these butterflies, or maybe he's like stored like youth in the butterflies and now he's like using them or something like that. He's storing souls in the butterfly with his like soul serpent, his soul fang serpent thing. But yeah, like isn't that crazy?
Yeah, no, it's definitely like we said, he's getting sketchier and sketchier as he goes on. But and then like you said, there's like that burst of purple light, And every time they've done dark magic, there's been that purple light either in their eyes or whatever, or out of their hand. So
purple is the color.
He's doing the dark magic there, and it seems like to make himself live. Yeah. And then you see the butterfly on the ground after that's clearly dead or lifeless.
Yeah, like purple, I think, is the dark magic color, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so I'm going to start thinking about purple differently now. But yeah, so after that scene, we come over to Callum, Ezrin, Rayla, and Bate. And Callum is playing with the magic cube that they got at the Banther Lodge. And he's just like putting it closer. He's pulling it away from Rayla while she's sleeping. And she's putting it closer again. And it keeps shining. And it's just supposed to signify that she's like got this moon magic in her. But it's just like the funniest thing ever. Because it's like one of those like clap on, clap off.
But he's like using her face for it, and then she kind of like wakes up, but like at first she just opens the one eye like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm trying to sleep right now.
Yeah, it's so funny. I really like that scene, and I'm like wondering what this magic cube is used for. And also Bait I think is sunfire magic, because he got close to the cube and then you see it light up orange, and I tried to like zoom in on it and I think it was the sun on the cube. So I think Bait is like a sun magic toad. I think that's what that signifies. But that was
sun or light magic. Yeah, same
thing
pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was a really cool scene. And then after that, Callum tries to do his electric spell that I think he saw Claudia do. Is that what happened? Maybe once he saw Claudia do it before. So he's trying to figure it out, but he's failing pretty hard. He'll get it at some point. He'll be like probably like the most amazing wizard by the end of this show, however many books or seasons they have.
Right.
He is the chosen one, Harry Potter.
The chosen one.
But yeah, after that, they get into the boat because the boat's going to be a lot faster to get to Zadia. But then we find out that Rayla is actually maybe doesn't know how to swim, or either she's just scared of water. So yeah, she is frightened.
It also seems like she gets seasick really easy.
Yeah, really seasick.
Which I know that feeling very well.
Yes, you do. But yeah, then they go to they cut over to Viren and Amaya, and you can tell that Amaya is not happy with Viren at all. She is like, she thinks she sees the shady stuff going on. But yeah, then they have this moment where they go over to Amaya's sister's grave, who is the queen, and who used to be the queen, I think, before she died somehow. They haven't said how just yet, but her name is Queen Sarai. So that's Callum's mother's name. So we don't know like the rest of her family, but at least we've got Amaya, we've got Sarai, we're getting some backstory for Callum. So this is really, really cool. Can't wait to see more of that. But yeah, throughout that whole time, Amaya is just not falling for it at all. Yeah. Viren is trying so hard to pull the wool over her eyes, but Amaya, you know, she's got like some extra sensory perception going on and just does not let that fool her at all for a second. But after that, we go back to the main three who are fighting, who actually Bait falls out of the boat. And I guess they say that Bait is like this delicious, delicious toad. And
yeah,
sea monsters,
super good.
Sea monsters love the taste of glow toads, and you know, right after they say that, this crazy sea monster shows up and starts attacking them, and almost eats Bait, but Rayla does some crazy acrobatics and saves Bait from this huge sea serpent monster.
Yeah, they're like dangling over the mouth and almost get swallowed a few times, but
yeah, it was such a good scene. Seriously, the animation in the show is amazing. But after that scene, we find out that Rayla, her parents, she goes into her parents in her backstory a little bit. And her parents, I guess, were two of the eight warriors of the Dragon Guard, which are this elite group of elves that protect the king of the dragons and the queen of the dragons. And I guess, you know, during that big battle where the king of the dragons, Thunder, got killed and the dragon prince supposedly got destroyed, the Dragon Guards, her parents, ran away and didn't help, didn't save the dragons. And they're kind of the reason, part of the reason why Thunder got slain in that battle. So
she's kind of ashamed to be their child. But I was just going to say, at the end of that sequence when they're trying to get away from the sea monster fish thing.
Yeah.
I just thought it was cool that when Callum's trying to mess around with the electric magic, he can't figure it out. But then they time it so that she jumps off, that Rayla jumps off of the fish with bait. At the same time, he uses electric magic, touches the water, and basically fries him.
Oh, right. Yeah. He uses the spell and it works, and it's such a good plan, and it actually worked out really well for him. So that was really cool to see more magic from the show. And then I think we found out that the stone, maybe in the episode before that, was sky magic. So that what's it called? The primal stone that he carries that has like the little like thunderstorm inside of it is actually sky magic. So he's able to like harness, I guess, sky type magical things. So anything related to weather, I'm sure he could probably do at some point. So thunder or whatever is really cool.
But yeah, back to what you're saying about Rayla and her parents. Then she also talks about how it's elves aren't supposed to show weakness or fear or anything like that. So that was part of the reason why she didn't want to say that she was afraid of being in the boat or being on water. Or if she gets sick or whatever, they're just not supposed to show any sign of weakness.
Yeah, that's right. They're not supposed to show any sign of weakness. So it just looks really bad. And she's really trying to pick up, I guess, her family name from the dirt, I guess. Right. That's probably like.
Yeah, she just wants to kind of remake how she's thought of.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why she was doing that whole assassin quest or whatever. but yeah, so that's pretty much that.
Yeah, the only other thing that happens in that one is that Amaya sent, what's her assistant's name again?
Oh, Gren. Yeah, that's right.
Gren. She wants him to be in charge of the search for the princes, not Soren or Claudia. And so he's supposed to be in charge, and she leaves, and then Viren says that he's not going to be in charge and there's basically nothing he can do about it. And then I think it ends with him asking somebody to show him or to come see him later to complain about it or talk about it.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's how you leave the episode off.
Yeah. And with Runan, too, chained up.
Yeah,
Runan chained up.
He won't eat. And
you see, like, he still has another band from that blood pact that they made. He's got a band. It's on his shoulder. And you see it's just, like, cutting off the circulation in his shoulder. We find out in the next episode what the bands are doing. But, yeah, it's, like, his shoulder from, like, the wristband or the armband down is completely purple. It's, like, turning blue. It's, like, absolutely crazy the way it looks. But yeah,
it looks like it probably hurts too.
Yeah, so they have him held hostage, so he's not dead. They kept him alive. But yeah, going into the end credit scene, okay, here is something I saw at the end credit scene. The last picture that they showed was a character that we haven't seen yet, I think, in the show. And he was playing with a Glowtoad, which I believe is probably bait. So maybe bait belong to some other character that we haven't seen yet or haven't been told about yet. Maybe isn't around anymore or is on like some crazy mission. But yeah, so they showed this character that we haven't seen yet. And that's something that they also said, the creators said during that Twitch live stream, that people should be, I guess, paying close attention to those end credit scenes because they're showing characters and some things that might be happening in the future. So that's really, really cool, right?
Yeah, no, that's, I like how they did that. I wish I would have known about the end credit scenes more. I would have watched them all. I'll do that from here on
out. Yeah, we're definitely going to do it from here on out. But yeah, so then we're getting into episode 6, Through the Ice, literally. We're going through literally. The ice, guys. We're going through the ice.
Literally? Through the ice.
Literally. Oh, man. I love Parks and Rec way too much. But yeah, so I guess the episode opens up with Rayla and having, I guess Rayla's having this fight with Corvus, the tracker, the one that that General Amaya sent after Ezrin and Callum to rescue them, is now facing Rayla. Rayla was like off having like a moment by herself, and then Corvus comes. So the kids don't know that this is happening right now. It's just them two fighting off in like some other part of the woods that the kids don't know about. And she doesn't tell them afterwards. After the fight happens, Rayla wins. She doesn't kill Corvus, but they get like knocked off of a cliff, and Corvus is like it's like so far away. Like,
yeah, she just uses the terrain to launch him down so he can't climb back up it because it's too steep.
Yeah, that's right. And then like their fight ends and Corvus is like, you're not going to be so lucky next time or whatever. But yeah, so they're definitely going to face off again. But yeah, she goes back with the group and doesn't say anything. So she's not telling them things. And I think Callum at this point is realizing that Rayla isn't being completely honest, because just like the tone of her voice, you can see through all the dialogue that she is cutting short, you know, the conversations, is not going into depth about certain things. She hasn't told them about the wristbands. She hasn't told them about what that means, and the meaning that, you know, their dad is dead, because she knows because of that wristband having fallen off, right?
Well, hers is on, though.
Oh, that's right. Hers is on. But she saw the signal in the sky, right?
Yeah.
That's what happened.
She saw the signal.
Which is the signal for, you know, the king being dead, the assassination mission. Attempt being a success. Yeah. So, yeah, she's keeping that secret. That's going to be a really sticky scene when that comes to light, which actually it will in the end of this episode. But after that happens, we get this really interesting scene with Claudia and Viren. And Claudia is trying to do some kind of magic thing at this mirror. And Viren comes in and is like, that's not going to work. I've tried it a million times already. And none of these spells are working on it. And Viren goes into talking about the mirror. And I guess the mirror was this really cool relic that they found in the Dragon King and Queen's bedroom chamber, and it was like really close to where they slept. So he's like, this must be significant, this must be something really important, very magical. So he took the mirror from their bedroom and he put it in his like his area or his tower or whatever. So he's like trying to dissect its magical secrets, see if he can get anything.
At least he plays it off like he doesn't know. Like, it seems like he doesn't think it's going to do anything, but
probably telling Claudia
some point this thing is going to have some meaning or some usage.
Definitely.
They wouldn't have shown it yet.
Yeah, I'm interested to see if it's going to be something like, you know, that mirror in Harry Potter, like the mirror of Erised, or like something from Snow White, you know?
Yeah, the Harry Potter one I always thought was so cool. You get to like see his parents.
Yeah, it's cool so cool. But I love what they're doing with all these magical items. It's creating all these awesome, like I said in the last episode, these plot devices are really important to really solidify the differences of this show compared to other shows. You know, so like in Avatar, they didn't use magical devices. Everything was like powered by whatever bending technique that the benders were using, right?
I don't know if they had like devices. They just had like, it was almost like they had the spirit world. So they had spirits in the spirit world, but it was like almost one with the world. So it's kind of, it wasn't like a separate, like you're doing magic. Just like this, that's just like how it was. There's spirits and then there's bending.
Yeah. I love how different it is. But yeah, after that scene, the three main characters, the kids and Rayla, go up. They like hike up this snowy mountain, very Lord of the Rings type shots, you know,
of
like them just like walking up on the icy, icy, snowy mountains. But yeah, what ends up happening?
I love that part when they're walking up there and then they notice that it's like the snow seems like it's about to fall from them talking and the echoes of their voice. Everyone's like, oh, they're all like, be quiet, be quiet. And then Bait lets out a huge burp, which of course causes the massive avalanche.
Yep.
And then
massive avalanche.
Callum saves them with his, the spell. What's the
spell? Aspero.
Yes.
Right? I think that's the right one. Yeah.
Yep.
This little air tornado magic thing.
Yeah.
It's like a little tornado gun. That's what it looks like. It's like this little tornado comes out of his finger. He like points it or something.
It's like a Lucio gun, pretty much.
Yeah, a little Lucio gun. I love that. But after that happens, I think they get thrown over this ice lake, right? And
yeah, I think they do. They start walking to it, or do they fall into it?
I think they get just thrown into it somehow. They just get they fall over because of the avalanche. I think, right? That's how it happens.
Or the does somebody drop the egg and it launches over there?
Yeah, the egg just slides across the ice and is just like in the middle of this icy lake. And Ezrin just walks out, tries to get it, and then he picks it up and you see it start to crack underneath his feet. And you know, like, this isn't good. This is a really bad situation. He's going to fall in with the egg and it's probably going to be the end of everybody. So Callum, like, walks over halfway and Ezrin slides over the egg over to Callum, and then Callum wants to give it to Rayla, who slides across the ice as well. But is reluctant to take the egg because she's feeling all of this guilt of not telling the boys what she knows about her dad being, or their dad being, slain and everything else. So before she gets the egg, she kind of just like loses it, right? She's just like, I gotta tell them everything.
Yeah. So she tells them about the pact with the rope and their dad and
everything. She was spills lying. The beans.
Just like literally everything that she hadn't told them already.
Yeah, and Callum is so cool, and Ezrin, they're like both, like, they're already good friends with her. They're like, we don't have to talk about this now. This is okay. Like, you know, they're just like so chill about it. I mean,
yeah, also he wants to get rid of the egg.
So standing on ice, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was like really kind of emotional scene. But and as as he gives the egg to her, the wrist that's on her hand, which is like choking her hand, which is cutting off the circulation in her hand, the egg goes in her hand and then it hurts her, so she drops it and it falls through the ice and it goes into the ice.
Oh yeah, that just reminded me, the reason that the thing we're forgetting about the rope on her hand is hers didn't break, but Runan's did, because her mission was actually to kill Ezrin, kill the
well
the
king. I think yeah that's right. Which is funny because Runan has two.
Yeah, so maybe he had to do both. Yeah, because one fell off, but he still had the one on there.
Yeah, so I guess we're still trying to figure out how exactly that all works. Just the continuity of it, because we're such little nerds and sticklers for like the reasons for things. So we're like, why is that still there? How is that working? But yeah, it's really cool. So she then says like, after Ezrin jumps in, tries to save the day and get the egg, you kind of lose track of him under the ice, and they all think that he's dead because he doesn't resurface. But Rayla is convinced, because the wristband is still on her hand, that he's not dead. So they kind of use that as an indicator that he's still alive, and they go like scurrying across the surface of the ice trying to find him.
They hear him knock on
one side of it, and then they're able to pull him out. They like crack it open and they pull him out and he's okay. But then they look at the egg, and I guess the egg is starting to glow in a weird way. It's starting to flash. Instead of it being so bright and colorful, it's losing its light a bit in this moment. It's kind of like flickering, right?
So yeah, it kind of looks like it's fading, or I don't want to say dying, but something's obviously wrong.
It looks like there's a problem, and that's the way that it ends. That's the way that it ends. Yep. And then the end credits scene, we get another picture of that same guy from the episode before, who we don't know yet, and he's playing again with a glow toad. So this character seems to be really important, because they keep putting it in the end credits scene, so that's actually really, really cool, right?
Yeah, that definitely seems like somebody they're going to meet probably in the next episode.
Yeah.
7, I'm going to guess.
Yeah, and another point that we didn't mention yet about this episode is that we really, really get to see Viren's true colors, because he orders his son Soren and Claudia to go find the kids, to go find Ezrin, Rayla, and Callum. But he orders Soren specifically, and only Soren, to actually kill the kids. If Soren and Claudia find them, Soren has to create some way that makes it look like they died through,
make sure they don't make it back, basically.
Yeah, some like natural disaster killed them or something like that. So that's his task, you know. So this is going to be a really interesting next 3 episodes, to say the least, right?
Yeah.
If they're able to catch up, like, I don't even know what's going to happen. That's going to be crazy.
Yeah, it got dark real fast with that.
Yeah, but I mean, we're seeing the characters' true colors now, so it's I think everything's going to start coming out. Everything's going to start coming to light. Everything that's hidden, everything that's secret, it's coming to the surface, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, excited to see it. I think that wraps up for our episode 4, 5, and 6 little recap thing. So let's go into our bonus round. Today, instead of doing a top 10 list or a showdown, we are going to do a question of the week. Let's call it that. A Q of the week. How about that?
A Q of the week.
Get it? A Q of the week, because Q. There's the really bad puns again, guys. I told you I wasn't done. You stuck around this long, so you must be having a good time, okay? But yes, let's hope. Yeah, let's really hope, guys.
If not, like, what are you doing?
I know. But thanks for subscribing to the podcast. But yeah, so question of the week. So big news, if you don't already know, Wonderstorm and the people behind the Dragon Prince are working on a game, a video game. We're not exactly sure which like consoles or platforms it's coming out on. Probably going to be all around PC, PlayStation, Xbox, all of them. Hopefully Switch, that would be cool. But guys, here's the question. For this Dragon Prince game, what type of game would you like to see it created as? Some would say an RPG. Some could say a story-based game, like a turn-based, something like Final Fantasy. Or even, crazy enough, a Battle Royale. How insane would that be? I mean, that's the trend right now. Everyone's doing Battle Royales. But yeah, what would you guys like to see? Let us know over on QQuest on Twitter, at QQuest, and we'll let you guys know over there as well. We'll tweet over on QQuest and say what we think, what we would like to see as the Dragon Prince game. Does that sound good, Alex?
Yeah, so we're going to tweet our answers.
Yeah, we'll tweet our answers, because then we can, like, start getting everybody engaged over on the social medias, you know? Because that's what we got to do now that we're doing a podcast.
Yeah, I like it.
All right. Sounds like a good idea. Let us know, guys, at QQuest on Twitter. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode, the third episode of QQuest Podcast. Thank you again, Alex. Let's say goodbye.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening, and tune in next time.
All right. Thanks for subscribing. Bye.